We're back to the Neil Haley Show and also the Media Giant Effect. And I'm excited about my new segment. It's called CEO Spotlight. And my guest today is the CEO of End to End. And I'm excited to welcome Robert Stewart. Robert, thanks for stopping by, man. How are you? And, you know, it's always interesting to listen to entrepreneurs, CEOs, and see if all their lives they were looking at this is what they wanted to do in life. Is this what you wanted to do growing up?
You know what? I would be shocked to find out that majority of people say what they're doing now is what they dreamed of doing when they were a kid. Now, they may be related. Don't get me wrong. They may be related in regard to what their passion is or their gifts. I think it's always going to line up with that. But as far as ideally, no, not even close. I don't think so. I don't think so. But it's a good place to be.
It's definitely a good place, and you just never think about when you go and do it. So growing up, what did you want to do? Because I remember I wanted to be either a professional athlete, which I got the opportunity to be, and also I wanted to be like a sportscaster and a talk show host. Well, I ended up with both of those things, but they kind of went in different directions, and finally where I am today, I never would have said, this is exactly what I was mapping out. I wanted to play the NBA because I'm a legitimate 6'10", and I wanted to be, like a sportscaster, you know, like one of the major TV networks for sports. So those were the two like huge loves of mine. And it kind of ended up being a little bit of a different path. What were your likes growing up?
Yeah, that's true. I get that. And I'll have to, this might take a long time to explain, but to how it lines up. But when I was a kid, I played sports. You know, my family comes from a family of athletes, also a family of musicians. And So at 11, I took up playing the trumpet and I became a professional musician. And played trumpet, played jazz trumpet, played in big bands, played on, you know, albums and a number of commercials and did a lot of studio work. And that was something I loved doing. I studied it in school and in college and had a great time. And so I left school early to actually play music. I changed my major to marketing, but didn't finish just because I wanted to go on the road and play music because that was what I was going to do. Well, that lasted about, you know, 30 seconds or so, but I still played locally and grew up in the Kansas City area and played around there and just really enjoyed and still enjoy playing music, actually. But went back to school sometime in between there and got a degree in business and really started using some of those skills of, improvisation in an entrepreneurial environment, because I think that's what you do. Right. In this environment. So maybe they're related, maybe they're not, but I think creativity is part of the game. And I think that's the centerpiece of music at its core.
Yeah, you figured out exactly that's creativity, especially if you look at the creativity as a teacher, as I'm a former teacher, the creativity as a professional wrestler, to understand how you put that creativity together just to tell a story. And storytelling is one of the biggest things. And in music, it's storytelling because you have the beginning of a song to the end of the song and the story throughout that process. And I think entrepreneurship has to be a story as well, especially talking about your company and that brand story. So how did this all start for you there?
Well, you know, when I get out of school music's always going to be a part of me, right? It's always going to be a hobby. But I went on to learn with a very interesting gentleman. His name is Alan Boyer, who lived in Kansas City. And it turned out Alan didn't live very far from me. He studied with Deming. And Deming was kind of the father of the Six Sigma concept. Really, it was total quality management back in that day. And Alan was an older gentleman, but he kind of took me under his wing and really mentored me in the ways of Six Sigma. He was the Yoda, you know, and I became a consultant in that space, just really looking at process improvement. And it just became a passion of mine, really the interest in how do you improve processes and discover where dollars where they didn't exist before. And in doing that, I got a consulting gig with a company in California that was they did scrap. They scrapped copper that came out of the ground from the Verizons and AT&T's of the world that they were upgrading some systems. And they were pretty antiquated. I noticed they were very antiquated in their processes, but they didn't really think it was important to listen to the kind of new ways of doing things. And I mean, we kind of parted ways, but in that industry, I discovered an opportunity to help a company called Sprint dismantle the Nextel network and build a process for reverse logistics and recycling the equipment that came out of those sites. So I was able to land a contract with a company called Black & Veatch out of Kansas City to assist Sprint for New York and New Jersey, which was the most difficult areas that they had. Oh, yeah. And I developed a process to manage the reverse logistics from some of those tall buildings and rooftops in New York and New Jersey and bring them to a cross dock and bring them all the way back to where we were shredding them and sorting them and selling them back on the London Metal Exchange so that we could actually drive the dollars out of the metals that came out of that equipment. And I developed that entire process. We put it in place on the East Coast and ended up doing all the way down through Washington and Virginia and did a lot of work there. And that really started my journey into the path of technology, is really dismantling old cell sites.
And so starting by working for other people, you learned, and then as a consultant, you learned, so that I got to do this myself. So tell me how.
To a certain degree, yeah. I mean, it led me to asking questions in a space that I found that was antiquated in many, many ways. And we developed some processes and some technology that helped us to track that equipment while it was in the field all the way back to its reclamation point. And we were able to track that equipment in ways that would allow for reports and information that was not gathered at the time. This was 10 years ago or so. And at the end result was that, you know, we were able to deliver at a high level and we were able to deliver with efficiency, and improved efficiency allowed me to start making a profit. And that was the beginning of me understanding the area of communication, process improvement, field management, and continuous process improvement was what became our game. Yeah.
So that's where now when people ask you, well, tell us about your company. That's the hardest thing, right? Because ultimately it's so much of a logistics type of thing that only certain people can understand it, right? Is that the hard thing? Like people, you know, you ask that aren't in this industry, what do you do? And what does your company do? How would you say that to them? Because that's the thing, you know, when you talk about breaking down specific things that are niche, that, hey, they work in specific industries, and then explain it to other people, especially when it's not a B2C, it's a B2B company. Explain that.
Well, you know, that's our origin story. I mean, it may be a little more complex and more detailed than we ever want to think about. But as far as our company, we're project management as a service, and we focus our attention on building out private 5G. So the question is, like, what is private 5G, right? Everybody says, well, 5G makes your phone work faster and does this. Well, 5G was designed really for a business footprint, like a college campus or a hospital campus or, you know, an industrial campus, to be able to execute transactions and activity faster, robotics and a number of things much faster. And it's able to communicate at light speed with another campus that could be somewhere else in the world or across the country. So we help to build out that for our communications organizations like the AT&T's, Verizon's, T-Mobile's of the world. And that's really our focus of business. We manage those projects to help build out private 5G.
And 5G's just gone blown up in the last couple of years, right? And what's the difference between private 5G and using one of the providers for 5G?
Well, private 5G is you know, it's always going to be administered by one of the providers, right? But what they're able to do is actually cover a specific footprint, geographic area, like a campus. And as soon as you get into that space, instead of moving on to their Wi-Fi, you automatically move into their 5G system. And that 5G system can communicate with another one. So, you know, one of the fictitious, just one of the dreams is that I could actually perform one campus, a hospital campus, perform surgery in New York on a patient in Los Angeles. Both campuses are on 5G and there's no lag time.
Lag time, because the internet speed is one of the most important things. Like, you can't be down. Like, when I'm traveling and I have two hotspots, change up from you know, different hotspots based on specifically where I'm at. And it's all, I always have to have fast moving internet, fast Wi-Fi. If you don't have that, especially with Zoom and different things, you're talking about surgery in one place and people have to see it from the next to be able to, you can't have anything lag.
No, no, we call it latency, and you can, there's, and you can't have any latency. Now, you know, obviously that's not, you know, we got a lot of things going on out here. Connected cars, IoT, which is the Internet of Things, where we have sensors on everything from stoplights to you know, smart cars to a number of other things. And being able to connect 5G from footprint to footprint is becoming more and more important. And it's not in many places as you might think right now. It's in different spots, but it's the idea of being able to connect quickly and in a specific geographic area, particularly if you're going to remain in that area for certain kinds of activities, whether it's engineering activity or testing or a number of other things that could take place.
So the project management you do is then do it with the major provider and work one-on-one with that provider and that big vertical market like hospitals, yes, big municipalities that just have never gotten 5G, and that's work right with them to make it connect, because people think, oh, 5G is never coming to me, right? We know that I don't even know the map of 5G now. It's still not that large, is it, for the United States?
No, I mean, we'll say 5G, you can get it in spots on with your phone, but the real effective nature of 5G is being able to use it in an industrial-like environment, right? And having that stationary footprint that is always active. There's no latency, there's no crossover, there's no nothing, and it's constant. That's where, you know, the real value starts to come in. So we always think of Wi-Fi and cell phone connectivity because it's mobile and you can drive from one part of the state to the other and always have it. That's not the greatest value of it. The greatest value is that speed in that very focused footprint, geographic footprint, that allows you to start setting up systems that rely on it with no latency and allow the speed of robotics and communication and engineering and, you know, connected components to work together in a robotic-like environment.
All right, where's people can work is the best place, people. This is a great thing that's new. I mean, I've been educated by you completely on this interview, but where is the best place people can find information on end-to-end solutions?
End-to-end solution, go end-to-end.com. Go end-to-end.com. The story I just told you about, you know, having multiple vendors in New York and New Jersey, there's an origin story on that, which is an animated version of that origin story. And it's only a minute and 23 seconds long, and it kind of tells you how we got started. And then it talks a little bit about the software we use to make sure that we have a centralized database but a decentralized environment where things get done. Right. And so if you can imagine being able to work in multiple geographic areas, but be able to collect the data on what's being done and control the environment for continuous process improvement so that you sustain quality, sustain the budget, sustain the timing of delivery, that's how we're able to provide project management as a service, because we are a very decentralized environment. COVID's taught us that, right? And yeah, people work from home. People work.
That's what I wish we can continue to be. Right. I
mean, well, that's true.
We need to have the ability to connect anywhere. And, you know, the future of work, especially if we're going to outer space, we better get used to the future of work to be not at home.
That's true. That's true. I think like this, though. I think that there's some real value in working in a decentralized environment. Right. And I love that. I think that you cannot underestimate the power of being face to face. Yeah. Some things you just cannot get done, i.e. relationship, which when I first started in business, that the idea of there's only thing, one thing you need, and that is relationships. You protect right relationships at all costs, that business will come. And to me, that's key, right, is relationship. And I don't think that, I got married in 1942, you know, a long time ago, and they didn't have internet. So, but I wouldn't have asked my wife to marry me over the phone either. Right. And so the point is some things can only be done face to face.
Exactly. Well, we appreciate it, Robert. It was great information.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
I take it. You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.